The Association of Classical and Christian Schools presents Repairing the Ruins, the 2019 ACCS Annual Conference, copyright 2019. You may make additional copies of this recording for use by your school, but please do not sell any copies of the recording. Learn more about classical Christian education and the ACCS at classicalchristian.org.
My name is Stephen Salter. I'm with Providence Christian School in Dothan, Alabama. And this is a survey on sticky notes, so I hope you're ready for that. Actually, this is a seminar on how boring data really blew up our idea of growing community in the school. And it's been a surprise and a great revelation for us and a growing experience, and so we hope to just share that conversationally with you. And I want to introduce Emery Latta. He's the head of school at Providence Christian, and he's going to start things off for us.
Thanks, David. I think first we need to say if you're here for the round table, it's next door. I think they're doing that. A few people, I think, figured out that they were in the wrong place, but they are next door. We're going to share with you what happened to us, the Lord's direction as we started down the path of doing something for our focus group work in a strategic plan that ended up being the perfect survey for us for what we needed and the practical way to really put that together. So let me pray, and then we'll get started. Lord, just ask for your presence with us this afternoon as we meet and share. Father, for the opportunity to share the ideas that we know came from you. And so, Lord, I just pray that you'd be with us in this space, that you would give us the opportunity through your mercy and grace to use the things that we've discovered and that you'd show us each day to make us better at what we do. And we just pray all this in your name. Amen. Mm-hmm. And so our experience with surveys, if you're looking to do or looking for us to share a whole lot about a written survey, we're not going to do that a whole lot. We've done three of them. I've been through three traditional surveys in, I guess, the last 5 years. And the first time we went through it, we were doing it for our accreditation with a secular organization, and they did not allow us to change the survey whatsoever, and there were not any spiritually oriented questions, and yet there we are, a classical Christian school, and as you can imagine, we were very frustrated by that. And the second time then we did it, we did one the next year to try to right the wrongs, and we did it on our own, and we did it through SurveyMonkey, which is a great opportunity, good organization to work with in designing it. You can be not knowledgeable at all about doing that and make that work. The issue became that we had mountains of information, especially from the narrative aspect of things, and it was very difficult for us to digest all of that into a usable format. And so then the third time we did it, we said, we're going to fix it, we're going to make it right. So we used an outside organization to help us with that, and it was better. Found out some really good things, like Net Promoter Score is a great way to do a survey. Net Promoter Score is a number that you get from asking a question. Just one question survey you can do. Would you recommend this to a friend? And if so, why? And if not, why not? It gives you a lot of great information there. But one of the things that we really struggled with in surveys completely anyway was it's a little bit like an anonymous letter. And so you get a lot of information, and a lot of times you may get it from a person. I don't know how you are, but personally, when I go to a place, especially maybe a restaurant, and the food is not real good or the service was awful and I'm disappointed and I want somebody to know it, I fill the survey out. And so sometimes in parents we get that. And so, you know, I don't know we're getting a representative sample of doing surveys that particular way. And so all along I've thought, you know, there has to be a better way. And in the process of us doing a strategic plan, one of the things we wanted to do this year was we said we want to have engagement with our families. So we want to create focus groups. So this is following, really, I have a bibliography of a number of the resources that we've used, but certainly there's been a number of them that have helped us greatly. So John Bryson, who's written a number of books on strategic planning, this snowball technique really is his. It came from that idea. It was not ours. This is a partial sampling of those sheets that we put together. We're going to tell you how that worked in just a minute. But the beauty of that was it gave us a way to capture the information. And then also to do it in a collaborative way where there's actual conversations, communication. It's not just in anonymity. Now, if you get anonymous letters and you like to read those, you may be different than me, but I reached the point a few years ago where I said, I'm going to look at it, and if it is not signed, I'm not going to read it. And so I want conversation. If somebody has something they're concerned about, I want them to feel welcome, that they can come and share that with me. But then there's times we also need to engage our people to be able to ask them for the hard questions. And so I think this gives you an opportunity to do that. So this is a really good way. So we're going to share that with you in just a second. And so Harvard Business Review Publishing came out with a format that says 5 to 15 is the number that you're looking for of people before your group or team meeting turns into a regular meeting. And so you want people to feel comfortable. So we're looking for our focus groups and the development of them to be in that 5 to 15 range. And so, Stephen, why don't you share a little bit about how the focus groups got put together?
Yeah, so I'll share with you about the makeup and selection of the groups, because that was really important. It may not seem like it. But the first thing I would tell you is that we had multiple people involved in creating focus groups. And the reason being is because I don't know everybody at the school real well. And we wanted to make sure, number one, that we are establishing communities, I guess establishing groups in the school that represent different communities. In other words, I don't want three focus groups that are just all football moms and dads, or all, you know, whatever group. And so we wanted to make sure that what are the communities within our school? And sure, athletics was one, but there were first-year parents. I mean, you remember what it was like to be a first year in a brand new place in a Christian classical school? This is weird, right? So who are these people? And so, you know, you want to get your communities in groups. So we recruited some people, some helpers, said, hey, who should we have in these groups? And I didn't know how important that was until I showed up to one of our focus groups and saw the chemistry with these people. So we took a lot of time to figure out, should you be in a group with him or her? Should she be in the same group? So we had to have somebody, hey, who knows a lot of people in our school real well to put these groups together? And I'm telling you, it makes a huge difference when you show up to a focus group meeting and there's chemistry between people. They feel they have relationship already. Not everybody's best friends, but they have relationship. There's chemistry there. There's comfortableness there. So that's one element. One of the things that you'll see up here, and we'll talk about this more, is I'll just give you a couple of examples of what I mean by how we built these groups. So we had a focus group of basically room coordinators. These are moms and dads who are kind of coordinators for different grades. We had a focus group for the administration team. We had a focus group for logic and rhetoric. We had a focus group for Coach Wright's teachers team. So we kind of, and we've got a lot more different groups than we've put up on the wall. We just wanted to demonstrate to you some of the different groups. So these images in front of you represent different focus groups. And we put a lot of effort into getting a team of people to help us figure out what kind of groups would we have and who's going to be in the group and why does that even matter. So hopefully that will help in that.
Yeah, so the red line represents really the high point or the low point that people saw in the school. So we were looking to do three group meetings per group, three meetings in the school year. We didn't get to the third one. As part of our strategic plan, there was an opportunity for us to move on something in the community and in the land and the property area of the school. And so we paused that. We're going to pick that back up in the fall. But our idea was the first meeting was going to be for us to try to get some feedback. So we wrote down, both Stephen and I wrote down listen in caps on one of the 3x5 cards so that we would be quiet and let people talk. So we're trying to engage our families to talk. We're also trying to build trust so that they can say the hard question. And so we're going to read a few of those to you in a minute. You'll see some of the comments are pretty hard for us to, I'm reading it and Stephen and I are sticking those up. So he and I both placed every one of the cards you see there on there. So the first round mostly was green cards. So when you see green cards there, those are the above the red. That's the things that we're doing good. And so we place them in themes, in line, in order. We tape them together. So the rows you see are the ones that are alike, are similar. So like communication is one. Academic concern would be one. There were others that we did that way. And so we have them down here where you can see them. And if you want, in a little while, you can come up and look at them closer or take a picture or whatever. We realized this is kind of old school technology, but it worked. It was wonderful. I didn't know how it would work. So again, John Bryson and Strategic Planning book is where the information came from. It's called a snowball technique. And the red tape was just the median line there on the sheet. And that is bulletin board paper. It's just torn off, taped up on the wall in the room where we met. And all the participants in the group were given cards. We tried to limit it. We just for time, we told them tell us three things that are good that are going on in the school. So give us your top three when you think about Providence Christian School. What's something good you could say about the school? And they would write those things down. And then I collected them and had some help sometime. Another person would help me with that. And then Stephen or I would place those, and we would try to just to do that while they were seated there. So it would take a couple of minutes, 2 or 3 minutes, and then we would go place those cards above it, and then we would go through those and talk about them. Then we did the same thing then after some conversation on the highs with the lows. And so those are the red cards there. So it was red and green. Green and red colors obviously fit the go and the stop, but the things that are that you're concerned about, they wrote those on the red cards, and we placed them again in themes that are there under the red line. So the red line is kind of the median point, so the high and a low. That's the highs and lows exercise.
Yeah, and I think that, you correct me if I'm wrong, but I think the chemistry of the groups helped them be comfortable. In other words, here's the head of school and a board member. We're asking them for participation, to be vulnerable, transparent, honest, right? And so we're really asking them, hey, look, what do you think are things that we really do well? Like, be honest with us, right? And that's kind of hard for some of them, you know? They're ready to get to the red cards, like, what do we do bad, you know? But that's great. So just a point on that is, you know, we sit in different seats. Emery is the head of school. He's at the school every day. He lives there, basically. I don't. So when the red cards come and we read those, that's hard for him. It's hard for me, but it's harder for him. I'm just saying that because when you ask a group of people to be honest with you, and you ask them over and over, and they're honest with you, then just be ready to hear what they have to say, right? Because it can hurt your feelings as an administrator, as a head of school, as a teacher, whatever your role is in the school. But it's a great way for us to listen to our folks. One thing was, you can jump in here, is it gives everybody a voice. In other words, if I have a focus group together and there's a dominant person, they're going to control the whole focus group, right? And people who have a valuable opinion may not get to share their opinion because someone's just dominating the group. So this is a way for everybody to have a voice. And we spend some time going over, hey, what do you mean when you say we do this well? One thing that was obvious to us is that some of the things that we thought we did well, they're missing. They're not on this board anywhere. Nobody said that. So do we not do it well? Or do they just not think we do it well? And so you're learning about your people. You're learning about your grammar school parents. You're learning about your logic parents. You're learning about your administration. I mean, you're learning all these different things, right? And then when you get to the red stuff and you see a big group under instruction and you hear the, you have bad teachers, you're going, oh, you know, what does that mean? And so we put these up here, but then we dive into these things and we ask them, hey, look, I know you're here for kind of a survey, but what's happening is there become dialogue. We start having a conversation. We start listening and being quiet for a while and digesting what they're saying. And then we get a chance to respond, not react and say, but, you know, we just, okay, great, that's your experience. But we're having relationship now with all these different communities in the school. And a Survey Monkey doesn't do that. Both are valuable. There are places for both. But this is different. And we didn't realize this till about group number three. And we're going, man, like we're building relationship with people in our school that we never would have done outside of these focus groups.
And so there's 14 different groups. So we've had 28 meetings with another round of 14 to go when school starts back in August and probably in the first of September. And they're represented by teacher teams. So our instructional staff is divided up into teams. There's an administrator with less than 12 teachers and each one that meets every week. We do a faculty meeting as needed. Sometimes every 6 or 8 weeks is all that we have a faculty meeting. Sometimes, as you can imagine, in the spring when testing and other things are going on, we meet a little more often than that. And in lieu of a teacher team meeting, we will do a staff meeting. But otherwise, we're doing the team meetings. So I'm obviously very intrigued. And really, Steve and I both were having a conversation during the time Davies and the Chick-fil-A people were here, because this is so right in line with exactly those same thoughts about building community and collaboration amongst your staff and your families. And so the most frustrating thing for me as an administrator is that we communicate, we think we're communicating, we talk and we write and we talk and we write, and yet families don't get what we're really about based on the questions or the feedback that you get. And so how do you have that? How do you build that? Well, with the 14 different teams, and so there's our student leadership council, one of the most interesting charts of all is the one with the different color. It has the pink cards and the yellow and the orange. Is our SLC. Those are that's our house leadership. So we have 8 houses, and so the head of and the vice president for each of the houses as students are on that. We call it the Student Leadership Council, and they are the ones who had that meeting, and there's just all kind of information that's there. It's really interesting to see what they had to say. So you have teacher teams. There are 6 of those. There's 2 administrative teams, and then there's also parent focus groups that we've talked about. So the way we decided on who is in those, we selected those parents. And so it wasn't just the yes people that we thought were going to answer and feel like that they would hear or say what we wanted them to hear. We have some that are fairly new to the school. We made an intentional purpose to try to get to know some people that were new to the school, and so they were represented there. But then also the grammar school. There was one specific for the grammar school, which first grade through the 6th grade, focus group of families that are there, our parents that are there. Most of them are husband and wife. Obviously, the one that is the homeroom teacher or the homeroom moms was ladies. But then it was circumstances where somebody couldn't come to one focus group. Like, we had an awkward situation happening because one of the homeroom moms, actually it was for the homeroom mom meeting, for the room coordinators is the actual name for it. So for the room coordinator meeting, a couple of dads showed up that couldn't come to the meeting the day before. And we told them, yeah, come on, we'll come to the next one. I forgot to tell them that. And so everybody's sitting around like, why is Margaret's husband here? And they didn't invite my husband. And so about 15 minutes in, I told Stephen, I said, Stephen, I messed up. Let me explain that. So we explained that to them. That helped. But there's a little bit of a mixture that happened. Also, there's not 100% attendance in the first meeting that was there for the second meeting. In fact, one of them was quite a bit different. But our thinking is this. This is our communication to say, here's the school's response to your concern and your question. And we're going to answer that. And now we have 12 or 14 from that meeting that day, advocates to sit in the stands at the basketball or the on the deck of the swimming pool and have a conversation like, well, that's not what Emory said. We asked that same question, and here's what they said. Here's what the school thinks. So hopefully building some advocacy, too, to have a voice on the outside.
And I would say two things also. So number one, this is a great way for us to build a pool for board members, because we're not that good at that, to be honest. Like, it's kind of last minute, like, oh, we need some board members. Who can we get? That guy, let's get him. And but so this is a way for us to set up a system and a process. So now we have a large group of people that we're kind of dating, right? And we're kind of getting to know them, and we're going deeper in our relationship with them, and we're listening to their questions, and we're going, you know what? This guy or this girl gets it. And let's start going in deeper with them. Let's maybe read a book on classical Christian education with these 4 or 5 people, and let's see if they want to go to the next level. We begin to have a process of getting to know people who could become board members down the road. I forgot what my second thing was.
Well, so important. Let me jump in. Giving a voice in silence, Stephen mentioned that. So we pass the cards out, and so we ask everybody, let's have a conversation. Just tell me what 3 good things the school's doing. And so everybody fills the card out without conversation. We take the cards up. We start posting them. We tell them we're going to ask for the ones that they have for suggestions or things that you can think of that need to be done better. We pass those cards out and, again, do the same thing. And then we have the discussion. And as Stephen said, it keeps one person from, you know, the dominant voice dominant personality. And here's the beauty of it. It builds a thematic representation of what the group thinks. There's your survey. And so those cards are stuck together in the themes from which people thought. And it builds community from that standpoint. Or they could be concerned. Like, wow, I didn't think about that. That's right. I've had that same question. I didn't think to ask that. And so then as the moderator, and Stephen moderated most of these meetings, he is in control of the conversation. He can say, okay, let's talk about it. And obviously where there's the most cards, the most question, that would be the place to have the most conversation. And so he would talk about that and ask, okay, so, and we'd actually read what's on those cards to them. And then either approach one of the questions that are there or get feedback from the people that were there sharing as well.
One more thing, and then maybe we can go down and talk about some specifics. I remembered my thing. So it also, this atmosphere, so let me back up and say that Emory mentioned to you that this is part of a strategic plan that we were kind of doing at the school. So we're asking them, we want you to be involved in the strategic plan. And we want you to come and give us your feedback because we want to listen to you and we want to use your feedback for direction. So we've just told them these things, and now we are going to be held accountable to, did you listen and did you do anything? And so this is a way that it puts us accountable to listen to your constituents, listen to your people. And some of the things don't stick, right? But a lot of them will. If you just slow down and listen, and if you see a huge clump of red, that's an issue. Maybe you knew about it, maybe you didn't, but it gives accountability to the board, to the school, to what's happening. The second thing is, some of these meetings, I asked Emory to leave, you know, and said, hey, can you start it, and then can you leave midway through? Because you're the head of school, and they may not want to say something with you here, right? And that could be true with me as well, but for whatever your dynamics are, you can figure that out. But obviously there might be times where you're asking them to be transparent and vulnerable, and they're not going to do it because head of school's there, and they know him or whatever relationship. So just be cognizant of, you know, you're asking them to be honest. Are you prepared, and do you have mechanisms to hear that stuff the right way?
And so the information that was there after we did the first round, which almost all of those are from round one, we have a few of the round two. We only put one of them up, and we made an arrow to try to show how we conjugated the question or the concern into actual practical strategies. But of those that are there, what we had by having it on the cards and having those sheets, even where we could bring them to Atlanta, was the fact that we have captured that information. And that says a lot that, one, you care enough that you're going to keep up with it. But the other is, it's actually put on a spreadsheet. So the ladies in the office took all of those, two of them specifically. One of them, Neva, is here. Neva Kendrick, one of our assistants, is here to help us. And I appreciate her being here and helping me. But another one of the ladies that helps us quite a bit, who knows a lot about spreadsheets, helped us. But we took all of that information, and it is all on these sheets based on the focus group, but then also collectively by category. So we have it with the bar charts and graphs and so forth, all that information. And I thought back to those stacks when I did the written survey, and what am I going to do with all that? You know, I try to read it all in one sitting, and Stephen talked about that a little bit. You feel kind of like you got beat up a little bit after you read some of those narratives. Written in anonymity, too, is it just invites some of that maybe it certainly is okay to do, but obviously our takeaway from that process led us to the point that now we know kind of what the questions might be. Let's see if we can actually pinpoint them and then come up with some ways to answer the questions that are there. And so the process for that worked. And then I think the last thing is, I think you have to ask, who's the survey for? And so that to me gives you some direction about what you're going to do, whether you're going to use this format or not. I think you need to know, who's the survey for? Like the first time we did it, it was for the accrediting. It was that secular accrediting agency. That's why we did it. That was the reason we did it. And so that information, there were some useful things that always come from a survey, but that survey information was a little bit different than the last time we did the written survey, that we got to formulate the question. And then also now to get the information directly from a person. I thought about that with the Chick-fil-A presentation a while ago. We're talking to people. We're not reading information that was written from an anonymous source. And then we directly are responsible for coming up with some response to that as well. So it certainly was fruitful for that.
So you want to go down? And
yeah,
sure. We want to share just some, want to make this more practical and real. So what does this really mean? Can you share with us? So we want to get on a frontline level, and we want to kind of recap some of these meetings and maybe tell you two or three stories that came from these exercises, because this is where it became relationship. This is where we stumbled over the, like, this is what's going on. Like, we're building community. I'm getting to know them. They're hearing the vision of the school. I'm hearing their heartbreak, or I'm hearing their passion about this thing, or I'm hearing this glaring thing that we're missing. So we want to tell you a few stories about that.
Okay, I'm going to land on one of the parent focus groups that happened in, you can see the cluster of red that's there. I'll talk about that in a minute, but I'm going to do the green one first. And so some of the things that this particular focus group saw that they think are strengths in our school. Biblical worldview, integrating God into everything. Every class, every subject is taught from a biblical perspective. Integrity, accountability. Who you are is the core that is stressed from a godly perspective. Biblical-based learning in multiple subjects. And you can see that is pretty much the theme that has the most that are above the red line. A couple more. Servant-minded leadership, instilling knowledge and love for the word. Then on family, there's a family aspect, nurturing environment. Family, we are all in this together, teaching them with love. A good section, four or five cards here about the rhetoric part of the school. PCS prepares graduates to defend and verbalize their faith. Public communication, thesis prep, early introduction into public speaking and presentation. There's four or five in instruction, and that happened a lot. It was interesting to see the number of times that the same focus group would have a lot of the comments on an area for the positive, but then also there would be a good number of them that were also in the one that they saw as being a weakness or something that needed attention. All right, so let's jump into the instructional. So I would say the instructional was, this was a parent focus group that was mostly logic and rhetoric, probably families that had been in the school for a number of years that had students that were mostly at the high school level. Promoting unqualified teachers. Somebody wrote that. And by the way, I was in this meeting. Stephen didn't ask me to leave for this one. Teachers do not cultivate competition. Teacher support of house. Teachers need to be all in. And I don't know if all of y'all how many of you do house? That's a pretty good number. We went to Ambrose and spent a few days 3 years ago before we put the house in, because they did such a wonderful job with that and wanted to see what they were doing. And one of the things I remember being told was, your number one obstacle is going to come from a source that you don't really realize it is. It's not going to be parents. It's not going to be students. It's going to be your own staff. We found that to be true. So interesting that one of the parents wrote that. Better staff preparation. When humanities was introduced, when we changed humanities a number of years ago, they were referring to that. More teachers should own their subject matter, be energetic with the students. Lack of history, U.S. history being taught. We do humanities, and they're referring to that and the way that it was done. Stability in the high school, math and science. So one of the themes that was on a number of the focus groups was math and science, math and science. We kept seeing math and science. And, you know, one of the frustrations that I have personally is we do not see math and science as being a weakness. And so one of the things that John Bryson talks about in his strategic planning books is that when you have question and concern, as a response, there needs to be data to back up what you say. You know, I can stand up in front of people all day and say, our teachers are good, and I can talk about the teacher's name and what a good job, how hard they work, but data is still what people are going to go by. And the data points towards something different than math and science being weak. And so in round two, when we got to round two, after we did round one, one of the things we did was prepare the data to back up those things that we said. So I mentioned unqualified teacher and also math and science being weak. And so what we did is we got the data from our ACT scores, which shows that math and science is not weak. It's well above the state and the national average. Our average ACT score is certainly very, very something to be proud of as a school. And, you know, there's no standardized test score that shows that our math and science scores are weak. And yet that's the perception. So trying to figure out first, okay, why do people say that? And it came back to a couple of things. One is the student grades in math and science are lower than they are in the other subjects. More students make a C, a D, or an F in math or science. If they're going to make one of those grades at our school, it's going to be in those subjects. And so we took the standpoint, okay, we're going to address that. And there's also a need for tutoring in those courses, and there's not in the others. And so, you know, is that a hit on us, or is that actually something that points toward rigor in those areas? And so those were the questions that we wanted to ask in round two. So we asked those questions with the data to back up that there were scores were equitable with what the other courses were in, and that our students are scoring very, very good in math and science on the ACT. Those actually scores have gone up the last two or three years. Then in answering the qualified teacher question, it was interesting. Of course, we're a classical Christian school. We are not requiring or even asking our teachers to be state certified. But think about what are the community schools, especially the government schools around us, say about our staff? Well, they're not qualified. And they're saying that because they're not certified by the state of Alabama. That doesn't mean they're not qualified. So we have our qualifications. I just printed out the qualifications of a teacher for our school from our handbook. That most, you know, y'all know, everybody, including us, probably, be honest, you read the handbook when somebody gets in trouble and something's happening. You're questioning why that happened. That's when you read the handbook. And so they haven't read the handbook. They don't know what it, they just say, that's right, the teachers aren't qualified because whatever. If my child is making a C, and the teacher doesn't have a state certification, they're not qualified. Perhaps that's maybe. I don't know if that's always the truth, but that's part of what was there. So we need an answer to that. And so give them the data. So one of the things we did early in that second meeting was we passed out the information and had that for them to look at. Now, that happened, I think, Stephen, when you asked a question, said, what do we want to talk about? So why don't you talk about how we picked the subjects to talk about when we had the meeting?
And I think this is where you're going. If not, then just ignore it. So this is a follow-up round two meeting we have, and I want to tell you this because this is a great story about when you get people together and you're asking them to be honest and tell you things that aren't good, and you have somebody who dominates the conversation, and it's the same way in any community. You can have somebody who just says, look, well, you know that school has bad teachers, and now all of a sudden it just goes to the next person, to the next person, to the next person. And all of a sudden, our school has weak math and science teachers, right? Because somebody just kind of started that rumor, and it caught on. And now it's just a thing, right? Well, we wanted to dive into that thing. So we came to round two, and we said, hey, y'all, last time we talked, here's some things that you said. We want to pick a few and dive into them. And we're really concerned about this math and science thing that you guys are really having a hard time with and saying that there's some issues that you want to talk about. So we kind of dove into the math and science, and I kind of said, look, I want to talk about the issue, I want to know the obstacle, and I want to know what we can do to help improve it. But this was interesting because as we did this, really what happened was something unique, something unfolded. So there was a couple who were there, and they were telling us about their issues with math and science. They're kind of dominating the conversation. And as I probed and just asked more questions, they said, well, it's really just instruction overall. You know, we just have issues, you know. And I'm like, okay, well, tell me about these issues. Well, you know, in eighth grade, and it's interesting to know that, by the way, if you look at the grammar school and preschool, it's not until really you get to the upper school that academic and math and science becomes a really big issue because it's harder, right? And there's rigor involved. And so, anyway, we begin talking about these things, And all of a sudden, this couple goes from math and science to instruction. Well, it's really communication to parents, right? I'm like, well, talk to me about what you mean when you say communication to parents. Well, you know, our son, now it becomes personal. You know, our son, when we're in the seventh grade, you know, we didn't hear anything from his teacher. We only heard from this person, right? The administrator or whatever. We didn't hear anything from his teacher until it was time for the parent survey or whatever, the parent-teacher conference. And then we learned that, you know, he needs to be held back. And y'all, they were crying, talking to us about the way this was handled. And it became, there's your issue. They have a deep, deep wound from the seventh grade where their son and them, they were both all wounded in the process. I don't think anybody really would argue that it wasn't the right decision, but it was the way that it was handled to them was a huge wound, and it's still very, very painful for them. But through this process, and everybody was around the table just watching it unfold, and they just break down, and we realize, man, we're sorry. We handled that very poorly, didn't we? What we should have done, we should have had much better communication. That teacher should have communicated directly to you when there was an issue right then so you would know and we could work on it together, right? And nobody's perfect, and we admit that too. And so it's interesting, sometimes you may start with a smokescreen issue. Math and science, your teachers. And you ask more questions. And this kind of environment, this focus group, and having multiple meetings with them allows you to build relationships so you can go deeper. You can't do that in a survey that's digital necessarily. So there are places for both, again, but this was an example where we had a huge breakthrough. And then what happens afterwards? Everybody leaves. We go talk to parents and just hang out and sit with them and talk with them and say, hey, we're sorry. Help us learn from that. How could we do that better? And we listen and we listen and we listen. And we leave and we think. We don't just retaliate. Yeah, but. No, just listen. That's all they want is you to listen. That's all we've asked them for.
I'm going to point out one more thing, and then we're going to leave a little time for Q&A because there's not a whole lot of time left. But I think one of the values of this, beyond the highs and lows exercise, which is the red line that we've spent most of our time talking about, was really, you know, establishing, like, what is the vision of the school? And so with new families, this is a good thing to do. And we went over our school and preschool and the actual first grade through the 12th grade have been sister ministries for the 20-plus years of the school. This year, we combined under our same board. And so we're thinking, okay, we really need to build a bridge really well with our preschool. So we went over to the preschool thinking, okay, we need to have some conversations and just see where the gaps are. And then with the brand new families that are in the preschool, let's ask them, like, try to find out what they think the vision of our school is. And I'm going to tell you, it was incredible, that one exercise. Steve and I both said, I probably said that this was the most dynamic one of all, in that, you know, we did a graduate profile for the school about 3 years ago that our staff all sat down in the board and we collaborated and we came out with what do we want the vision of a Providence graduate to be able to do. But listen to this. This is it by people who had, none of them came to those meetings. They're just mama and a daddy who love Jesus and want their child to be taught with that. So, Stephen, why don't you read the...
What we asked them to do was, and this was in the thick of us really, really wrestling with the hard red, below the red line feedback on your instruction's not good, your math and science is weak, you know, your ACT, your A, and we're like, good Lord, who cares about the ACT score, you know, but it's a thing, right? And so you get that. So you're wrestling with all this stuff, and then we go to this meeting and we say, hey, preschool parents, just close your eyes for a minute. And I want you to think about, and it helped that there was mostly just moms there, I think. So they were in there with us. They're like, I want you to close your eyes and I want you to think about your son or daughter, you know, walking across the stage graduating, you know. And we did the da na 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 na. And they're all crying, you know, my daughter's going to graduate one day. But they're thinking about, I'm like, hey, what do you want your child to be like 17, 18 years from now, 16, when they walk across? What do you want them to have? What do you want them to learn? What do you want them to be like? Like, can you tell us what you see your son or daughter like when they walk across? What do you want that picture to look like? I want them to be kind. I want them to have a kind-hearted spirit that makes them want to help others and be servants of Christ. I want them to have respect for others. I want them to have character. I want them to have independence in studying, self-motivated. Academic knowledge, to be prepared for college and group settings, to have strong educational background, to be successful in accomplishing God's will for their life, to be spiritually and educationally equipped for college, whether it be liberal or Christian college, to love the Lord, a background of biblical knowledge, a relationship with the Lord, understanding His grace, understanding of the Word, to know what they believe and why they believe it. And one of them, I think, is not on here, but I promise it was here. And it said, to know who they are. And I thought, you know what's not up here? A 36 on the ACT. That they aced all their math and science tests. None of that's up here. Are those things important? You better believe they are. But it's not the vision of what we're doing there, what we're trying to shepherd, what we're trying to see the Lord do. So that was just it was a great moment where we thought, we didn't have this meeting to try to cast vision for the school, but that's what happened. In this atmosphere, we're able to help people understand a little bit more about what is it that we're really doing here. Do our parents get it? Do they not? Are we missing something? Are we blind in the area? Are we listening to our constituents? And so it's been a great breakthrough. And we've just decided, even after our strategic plan is over, we'll continue to have focus groups. May not be quite as many of them, and I'll just say you need to have a pretty good budget for lunches. Because there's a lot of lunches that we did, right? Spent a lot of money, but it's so valuable. So anyway, that's the story. You have something else?
Yeah, and I would say then my conviction today is, okay, so think about what I've said already, that all these below the red line things and the angst that's there, and the you want to prove that you are worthy, and yet families that are on the front end are already, they have a vision. You know, the ones that know the Lord, God gives you a vision for what you want your child to look like. We just need to do a really good job of reminding our families of why we're there, of taking opportunity to point that out, to point it out to our students, which the Classical Me, Classical Thee book, we read in the 9th through the 12th grade in our humanities classes, and they had Socratic discussions about that book. That was a great exercise, and we got some great feedback from our students on having done that. If you've not done that, that is a great thing to do, because parents are going to often parrot what they hear their child say. And so why are we doing this? Why does this matter? What does it mean? You know, what is the purpose? But our parents are coming to us with built-in, for the most part, vision for what we want them to say. What we have to do is communicate that and then find the ways, the advocacy, the system to put into place that helps remind them along the way. And that's the key. And I think this is part of that. So I think it fits in well. I was going to take just a minute or two and see if there's a, I think we're close to being time, Stephen, but
one
question.
Here.
Okay, let me repeat the question and see if I say it the way you asked. So in those focus group meetings, how do you keep there from being like a mob rule and a response that's negative, perhaps even? Yeah.
Can I answer one of those?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
So from the forefront, we set a few guidelines in our first and second written communication to these parents was that we wanted to have a format where we could listen to them, but we put some caveats in there. The purpose of this was to help us understand what they're thinking, but this is to help our board learn a lot from our constituents that we will consider as we're developing our strategic plan. In other words, we want you to come and tell us how we should run our school was not said, right? And so when they came, I also verbally said, y'all, some of what we talk about is going to be great, and some of it's just not going to stick because it's not a part of really who we are or the main concerns. Now, if 29,000 red cards get posted on something, that's a concern, right? And that's different. But anyway, there was communication about every little thing that you say is not going to make it into whatever strategic plan or the direction of our school.
And there's a practical part, too, Stephen, in that you may think, and we thought this too, we did not think we were going to do this in every group. We're just going to try it and see. And we ended up using it exclusively because it gives you, as the moderator, you know, that awkward moment when something goes wrong in a meeting, and if you haven't ever felt that, you've not had very many meetings, and you're like, okay, I got to get us in a different direction. the beauty of having the cards here is I can say, okay, that's enough on that. Let's move to this one. Here's one. I don't have to say, ask me another question. Let's change the subject. I have the subject ability to change right here in front of me. And you can move. And maybe once or twice that happened, but mostly it was because somebody just kind of went on and on elaborated a little too much. It wasn't necessarily negative. So I don't think there ever, did you ever feel a mob feeling or like we're out of control or there was a great emotion or anything?
And there's one more question.
Do we do continuing parent ed throughout the school year? For the most part, it was first, I've tried to do it in written communication by blog, and I have an article that I write each week called The Friday Focus, and we send those out, and we have a school newsletter, and we use that, try to do the platform for that. But there hasn't been a face-to-face as much, although when we have face-to-face, and we've done that when we did the humanities program switch over, we had a few meetings. A few parents will show up. Usually it's the ones that are real supportive and the ones that maybe needed to be there that you think maybe don't have the vision aren't there. And so trying to, and I don't know if y'all have ever, the most unwelcoming audience is when you stand up to a third grade program and you try to start talking about vision of the school. I don't know if y'all have ever done that. It's like grandma is not here to hear me talk about classical Christian education. She came to hear a baby sing. And I get that, and so you've got to so I think you can get some of that. My goal has been through the teachers, for our teachers to understand, and now hopefully through our students as well, they understand that, but then create opportunities. So this is an ongoing, because I think we found it with this that we could do that. So I would encourage you to, if you're not doing that already, are you already doing some? Oh, yeah.
Yep, and we've decided from this that we actually, a couple weeks ago, we're going to do, beginning in the fall, we'll have one or two first-year parent focus groups where we just dive into with first- or second-year parents, hey, what in the world is going on in this place? You know, what does this mean? What do you mean by classical? You know, we just dive into that stuff, walk through it. When you give somebody an invitation, we have found that people show up, you know. So anyway, we do some parent ed, like we'll invite a speaker in once a year and we'll have that, but this has been better. So we're getting close on our time. Any other questions? Maybe right here first. None. Almost none.
Yeah. So
the
first round was part of just gathering information from all the different groups for the strategic plan. Yeah. We need to break. If you have more questions, we'll answer them offline.
Yeah.
Stephen, why don't you pray, and then we'll.
Yeah. Thank you all very much for coming. Let's pray. Lord, thank you so much for this time. Thank you for folks who are here. Help us have wisdom as we understand different things that you're doing in our schools, and just thank you for your goodness to us. In Jesus' name, we pray. Amen.
Thank you all.